On Radio Jackie today, I'm speaking to Dr. Ben Spencer, who's the MP for Runnymede and Weybridge. The Chancellor's statement set out some key priorities when she spoke the other day. What are your thoughts on the proposals and how might they impact residents and businesses in Runnymede and Weybridge?
Well, I think what the Chancellor did yesterday, and I don't think she, you know, she waffled a lot, but she didn't sort of lay out anything apart from flying the kite for the fact that she's going to raise taxes when it comes to the budget later on this month. I think yesterday's statement was really about sending a signal to everyone and sending a signal, particularly to the markets, that tax rises are coming. And the Chancellor's only but herself to blame. I mean, it was last year's budget was catastrophic, has caused all sorts of harm to local businesses. I mean, taxing jobs leads to fewer jobs. You know, any sort of tax or tax rise leads to a reduction in the amount of thing that's being taxed. And I think what we're going to see later on this year is a failure budget, one which will fail to protect working people. It will fail to reduce energy costs. It will fail to get growth, as we've seen over the past year, and the people who are going to suffer will be yet again my constituents and people across the country.
And are there specific measures that you feel will directly benefit your constituency or areas where you'd like to see more support?
What I'd like to see is a Chancellor who the starting point is to recognise that we don't have money sort of coming out of nowhere. We can't keep on borrowing money on as essentially a loan, a mortgage on our children's head for spending, which is too much at the moment. So I'd like to see a Chancellor who, like most people, working on a budget that isn't just sort of endless borrowing and focusing on reductions in spendings and savings where most appropriate. We saw earlier this year the government try and reduce welfare spending, going completely the wrong way about it, which is unsustainable. I think that the absolute priority should be reducing spending, balancing the books, focusing on growth, helping families and businesses get into work. And if they are in work, you know, earning more money, doing well, and passing that on, a budget that supports businesses, that recognises that the key engine for growth is enterprise, particularly the private sector, and doesn't just focus over and over again on public spending, taxing and borrowing to drive that forwards. And things, you know, if she presents a budget like that, and I suspect she sadly will, I think she's clearly going to raise at least a handful of taxes, if not the main taxes. All it's going to do is cause more economic damage that we're going to have to fix when we get back into power at the end of this government.
And with the full budget due later this month, is there anything that you personally are watching out for that you'd like to see included for your constituents?
There is so much, but I think particularly for people living in Runnymede and Weybridge, it's all this, and frankly, across the country, it's all this talk of wealth taxes or property taxes. We have very expensive houses where we are. We have a lot of people who are on paper seem to be targets for this government, which are, you know, people who have their money tied up in their house. They're asset rich but cash poor. I worry that they're going to be seen as a target, which would be catastrophic for people living locally. But quite frankly, you know, any measures that don't support people into work and recognise the importance of business and aspiration are highly problematic for us. We can't, I mean, this is ludicrous. We can't as a country just keep on borrowing money from nowhere without pushing, without supporting people who are making money and creating the growth in the first place. It's unsustainable. It's totally unsustainable.
Artificial intelligence is increasingly part of government strategy. How do you see the budget supporting AI innovation, particularly in areas like healthcare, education and local businesses?
We need to support UK innovation enterprise. And as a Shadow Science and Tech Minister, this is something that I've been talking quite a lot about. At the moment, when you look at the government procurement of services, they're completely dominated by Amazon Web Services, AWS, by Microsoft, and by Google. And I have plenty of UK companies tell me all the time that they really struggle to get government contracts in terms of providing cloud services. And cloud services basically is everything now. I mean, it's AI services, it's data services, it's computation services. We need a budget that supports UK innovation enterprise. We have the best innovation in the world. We have so many fantastic startup companies, but they really struggle when it goes to sort of scaling up big time. And what happens is they move to America because they feel that the next step up in terms of investment and expansion, the UK just isn't the place to be. And what I'd like to see is a budget that sort of recognizes that we've got amazing talent, we've got an amazing startup, we're a great place to kick off a business, but to support people throughout the development of UK business and enterprise. Because otherwise we're going to continue to be dependent on big US tech companies, and we don't have to be because we have so much talent here locally.
Do you think Rachel Reeves's budget will reflect a realistic plan for AI development in the UK?
It's a bit difficult to sort of answer that question without knowing exactly what's in it. All AI companies are no different to every company, every organization in the UK. You need an environment which is pro-growth, pro-enterprise, reduces burdens on businesses. We recognize that as conservatives. We've always recognized that. And that's why we put forwards our alternative plans in terms of where the Chancellor can find the savings that she needs, while also supporting people back into work to get the changes that we need for our country to grow and thrive.
And how do you balance the opportunities of AI with concerns around ethics, jobs, and regulation, do you think?
That's quite a big question, talking about what the scope of AI regulation, what that should look like, what the approach would be. I think, and this is something again I've been raising quite a lot. There's a lot of people who are sort of experts in AI, particularly, for example, the head of Anthropic, pointing out that AI is going to end up essentially removing quite a few entry-level jobs, particularly in the graduate sector. And you're already seeing some evidence of that coming through. But as of all big disruptive technologies, and AI is sort of the mother of disruptive technologies in some ways that we've seen, it will create different jobs and more jobs. So it's not going to be that following this transition, my belief is that it's not going to be that there's fewer jobs. There'll be more jobs, but there'll be different jobs. And I think the focus absolutely needs to be managing workforce transitions, so preparing people whose job may be impacted by AI as it goes forwards to either whether that's change jobs or retrain or adapt their working practices so that they can embrace and use AI and stay working in the same sector. So I think there's lots of opportunities of AI, but we also need to make sure that we don't have anyone left behind as a consequence of this change. And it's something that in the UK we've got a pretty poor history of, to be honest, when it comes to industrial changes and making sure no one's left behind and communities aren't left behind. And I want to see proposals and strategies that do that so that we don't have a situation where we have people who really lose out because of change in AI, and they can't, they struggle to get over employment. At the same time, I think it is going to cause great economic opportunities. We've got to embrace that, absolutely, but we've also got to mitigate the harm on people who are going to be directly affected by it.
Moving on to Heathrow expansion. Now, many people in your constituency are concerned about Heathrow's expansion. What's your view on it?
So I've been a long-standing opponent to a third runway at Heathrow. It totally doesn't make sense to increase flight paths over what is the most densely populated part of the UK. I think the decision it has effectively been made. I mean, the Chancellor and the Transport Secretary have given their full-throated support. We've got plans which are being put together. So, while I oppose a third runway, I think it's going to happen. We in Runnymede and Weybridge benefit massively from Heathrow. So while I'm not a fan of the third runway at all, I do very much support Heathrow. It provides lots of jobs locally, and our connectivity is our bread and butter in where we live in Runnymede and Weybridge. The concern that I have is to do with surface access to Heathrow. So already we have lots of traffic problems, particularly north of my constituency, around Egham, but beyond. I've been campaigning for a direct rail link, ideally from Egham to Heathrow, irrespective of whether there's a third runway or not. We have huge problems with level crossings, particularly in the Egham area. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was there with the Shadow Secretary of State for Transport, and we had a 12-minute downtime during which four trains passed. It's totally unacceptable. And if it is going to go ahead, I don't want it to, but if it goes ahead, I want to make sure that we get transport improvements on the back of it. And for me, that is removing level crossings, direct rail links to Heathrow. And I raised this to the Secretary of State for Transport just last week to make sure that as part of the government's consultation on it, rail improvements locally and rail links to Heathrow are within scope of that. I think the consultation is going to come out next year, and it's something I'd encourage everyone living in the local area, not just in my constituency, but around Heathrow to feed into. And obviously, I'd encourage them to promote the campaign for direct rail access from Egham and the surrounding area to Heathrow.
Well, you've just touched on my next question, which was what steps are being taken to address local impacts like noise and traffic? You've just touched on traffic. What about noise?
The bottom line is, if there's a third runway, we're going to have more noise. And while usually there's compensation schemes that the airport that the operator provides in terms of insulation and stuff, it's not sufficient. So it's going to be a problem, and there's no way of escaping that at all. It's one of the reasons, in fact, it's one of the main reasons why I'm opposed to a third runway. I want Heathrow to be successful, absolutely, but its success doesn't depend on having a third runway. And like I mentioned earlier, this is the most densely populated part of the UK. It doesn't make sense to me to smack on more flight paths in an area when we have so many other options.
And do you feel the government is doing enough to mitigate the environmental and community challenges that come with airport expansion?
To be blunt, I don't think the government cares. I think the government has looked at this as, right now, the government is desperately trying to find growth opportunities as a consequence of its failed budget last year. It sees airport expansion as a possibility to getting some growth opportunities. I mean, and then, well, it will increase UK growth. There's no doubt about that. At least in my mind, I think it will contribute to growth. But at the same time, I think they're willing to sacrifice local communities as a consequence of that. The whole way this has happened has been with zero consultation with MPs. I have not had, to my knowledge, the Transport Secretary or anyone else for that matter from the Labour government come and say, by the way, Ben, you're 5 miles away from Heathrow, your constituency is. Could we talk? You're so affected by it. You've got so many people who work there. You've got so many businesses who depend on Heathrow. You have so many people who use it all the time, whether it's holidays or business travel. We'd like to talk to you, and we know where you stand. We'd like to get your thoughts on third runway Heathrow. No one has done that. It's just boom, we've decided it's going to be a third runway. That's how it is. Fait accompli. And this is the way this government does absolutely everything. It just comes up with announcements without any of the working out behind it. It's just like, for example, the mandatory digital ID scheme, which I know listeners will have heard about quite a lot over the past month. Big announcement, we're going to do this. No consultation, none of the working out behind it. This government needs to stop making announcements and start actually doing the work of government.
Next topic, devolution. Now, there's been a lot of talk about devolution and giving more powers to local authorities. How could this affect Runnymede and Weybridge, which I believe is going to be part of East Surrey? Is that right?
It's going to be part of both. So the constituency is part of it goes into East Surrey and part of it goes into West Surrey. I mean, lots of residents are very concerned, not least about the way that this has been approached by the government, but what this is going to mean, both in terms of continuity of services. So, SEN, special educational needs, is a particular challenge locally. The county's been working very hard in terms of trying to addressing that. As have all the local MPs. There's big questions what this means in terms of SEN going forwards. Particularly in light of the government's delayed white paper and making sure, I mean, it's also an opportunity, to get the best services we can. But it is disruptive. But then the real, I mean, but so that's really important. But I think the one that's on everybody's mind, not only just the SEN part, is what to do about the debt. And so far, the government hasn't come up with any satisfactory answer. What's going to happen with the woking debt, and how that works in the west side of the unitary? And this really matters because the quantity of debt is so much. I've just mentioned SEM, which is really important, but we're going to be really hamstrung if the west unitary particularly, starts off effectively bankrupt because of woking debt and then trying to deliver core services. So there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment in terms of what this means for people living in, particularly in West, but I think it also affects people in East as well.
Yeah, lots of changes happening. And are there specific areas where you think more local control could benefit residents, for example, in transport, health services, and education, as you were just talking about?
You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, particularly when it comes to transport, one of the benefits of, while I'm not a fan in terms of how devolution's been approached by the government, getting a Mercosur will be a big benefit because there will be devolved mayoral powers, particularly around transport infrastructure, which is something that we absolutely need to focus on. Surrey really suffers in that outside of London as a whole, it's one of the biggest contributors to UK tax input. But in terms of as a proportion of spending, it doesn't get the sort of equivalent that you'd expect, which is why campaigning for improvements in infrastructure is keeping Runnymede and Weybridge moving is one of my main priorities. I think a mayor could help with that. Equally with influence and control over health. I mean, I find it really, 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 really frustrating that as a member of parliament, I have no direct control over what happens in terms of local healthcare provision. My mechanism of accountability, the way I can hold the trusts to account, is speaking in parliament and speaking to the Secretary of State for Health or raising it that way. But I don't have any direct levers I can pull. I don't know whether a mayoral system will necessarily help with that, but at least when it comes to services like health, but at least it's there are areas, transport, major infrastructure projects, such as the River Thames scheme, where mayoral control will help in terms of driving things forwards.
Next topic I want to touch on is local community highlights. Now, Weybridge and Runnymede Pub of the Year's shortlists been recently announced. How important are local institutions like these for the community?
I mean, incredible. Absolutely incredible. I mean, so the winner, by the way, hasn't been announced yet. So we've got the shortlist of six pubs, which I'm currently in the process of going to each of them. Some I've been many times before, some are new in terms of me visiting them or visiting less so. And we're going together to put to a whole series of sort of vignettes of the six shortlisted pubs for people to do a public vote to decide which one is going to be the pub of the year. I've gone for, I think I've visited now half of the shortlisted pubs, and it's brilliant. The pubs are. And these pubs which have been shortlisted especially are the centre, the hubs of our communities. They've been really struggling for quite some time, not least during the impact of COVID, but especially now in terms of taxation policy and cost of living challenges, energy costs, etc. We need to support them. When they're gone, they're gone. And this is one of the reasons why I set up my Runnymede and Weybridge Pub of the Year competition. The announcement for the winner after the public vote will come out before Christmas. Take a look at the shortlisted pubs, go and visit them. But beyond that, support your local pub, whether it's been shortlisted in the competition or not. We had so many entries to the Pub of the Year competition. We really do love our local pubs in Runnymede and Weybridge, and we need to help them, along with all our hospitality sector.
And what do you think recognition like this means to the pub owners?
It's really huge. I've been asking, when I've been doing my visits, I've been asking them, what does this mean to you? And it's just a sense of pride, pride in what they do, pride in the help they give to, going a bit and beyond for the community as well. And One of the pubs I visited in the past week, it was the White Hart in Newhorn, and the lady there was telling me that and showed me feedback that they recently got from regarding several people who came to have lunch there, who were people living with dementia, and the support they got from the staff in terms of getting into the pub and eating there and going above and beyond in terms of helping them out. I mean, it's people are just so they're so proud to have this recognition from the communities, and it's a tough job working a pub, and it's a good news story. In my we need some good news stories, don't we?
Absolutely, I do agree. It is good to hear. And you probably can't say, but after visiting all the ones you've been to so far, have you got a favourite?
I am not allowed to. Well done for tempting me. But no, I've been very careful to keep try and keep a bit of distance, and no one can accuse me of any sort of bias in the process. So yeah, of course, I've got favourite pubs in the patch, but all our pubs are absolutely brilliant.